Welcome to Purple Politics Nevada. I'm your host, Lucia Starbuck. For this month's episode, we're talking about the impacts of cuts to the local food purchase assistance cooperative agreement program. Federal funding went to the state and tribes directly, who then paid small farmers in Nevada to grow produce to supply food banks in the state. First, we start in front of the Pyramid Lake Paiute Tribe Food Distribution Program's Big Blue Warehouse in Wadsworth. That's where Samuel Ataidi is cooking up some Brazilian steak sandwiches the size of your head.
Every other month I come here with my consistency, you know, to offer, make people happy with a steak sandwich.
Inside, vendors are selling everything from homemade jams to beaded jewelry. Next to them are pallets loaded with a variety of produce, like bananas, ginger, and potatoes, for the bi-monthly farmer's market. Director Francesca Maipi is helping a pair of visitors pick out tomatoes.
One more.
She likes even numbers, huh?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
The event only takes up a small portion of the 22,000 square foot building. There's a clothing rack, computer lab, books, and of course, food, with signs directing people toward healthier options.
Inside, we've set up our food pantry to mimic a grocery store. So people can come in with a grocery cart and we'll walk them through the aisles and they get to choose what they would like to take home for their families.
The food distribution center serves about 600 to 1,200 households per month from all over the surrounding area. Reno, Lovelock, Fernley, Dayton, Silver Springs, and it's available to tribal members and non-tribal members alike. As we walk through the warehouse, Maipi proudly shows me condiments, recipe cards, baking materials.
And then over here we have probably the star of our pantry is our meat. Is our meat freezer, because meat is such an expensive commodity to get. And if we can get meat in here, everything else can fall into place.
But now things are looking shaky. The federal government terminated funding for the Local Food Purchase Assistance Agreement Program. Three tribes in Nevada received money, including the Walker River Paiute Tribe and Fallon Paiute Shoshone Tribe. In 2023, the Pyramid Lake Paiute Tribe received $290,000, and at the beginning of the month, there was only $38,000 left. Maipi says the tribe was set to receive nearly $113,000 in November, but that's no longer the case. I sat down with Maipi and the tribe's chairman, Stephen Wadsworth, to learn about how they used the funding.
Thank you both so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The federal government cut the Local Food Assistance Purchase Agreement program. What did that agreement do that you weren't able to do before? How impactful has it been?
I would say it's impacted us greatly because we've been able to purchase locally beef, poultry, farm fresh eggs, dairy, homemade jams and breads. And it enabled us to purchase food for the first time, other than the tribal funding that we do get. It's enabled us to purchase food in bulk that we wouldn't have been able to do before. When you go to buy beef, you usually have to buy it by the cow or by the half cow. So it's enabled us to do things like that. It's pushed us to learn about the local producers in our area. One of the hardest things that I had to go through when we first got the funding was to just get out there and learn who does make bread around here, who does have a farm with some chickens. But then it's cyclical too, because once we've established those connections, when we have produce that we just couldn't get out in time to the people. So any producers that we know that have a farm, we can turn around and say, hey, we've got some produce that has gone a little bit. Do you want to come pick it up? And then they'll give it back to their animals.
And you showed me some of the local stuff you have down in the pantry, jams and honey. How meaningful is it to work with local farmers and to get that fresh produce and meat?
I believe that it boosts the morale of the local producers around here. We've increased their production by a lot just because of the number of the people that we serve. It benefits the local economy. And then the participants that come through our food pantry, they're eating better.
How do you feel knowing that that money isn't going to come in November?
It's a little stomach churning. We've utilized it so much to benefit our food pantry. it's just made me want to work even harder to fill that gap and that need.
Is there any way to make that money up?
There are several things that we're trying to do. One of them is working even more with our local partners. We're always sharing information about new grants or new opportunities. But at the same time, we're not the only ones that had funding cut. So the grants have become more and more competitive now. And then another way that we're trying to make it up is tapping into local events that are coming up. So the farmers market that we host, the vendors that come through do pay a booth fee. So that goes into our food pantry budget. Burning Man is also coming through. So we're encouraging the Burning Man camp kitchens after they're done with the burn going through Exodus to stop here and donate any leftover food that they may have so that we can go through it, sort through it, store it, and then trickle it through our food pantry.
And what do you think is going to happen after October? Is there just going to be like less food available, less meat in the pantry?
I don't want to say yes to that because a lot can happen between now and then. And every day I'm looking for new opportunities and places to pick up from. Maybe a new grocery store will open. I didn't know about the new Trader Joe's that were opening until they were about to open. So I've always got my eyes open and my ears open. We might have a little lull, a time that we don't have as much to offer, but like I said, a lot of things can happen between now and then.
And Chairman Wadsworth, what are you seeing on your side?
Well, I get to hear about it from every angle almost. And it really is, like Francesca said, everybody's feeling these impacts. Doesn't matter what walk of life you're at, we go about our day to day, just dealing with it. Because we're not just talking about just the Pyramid Lake Paiute Reservation. This is impacting our neighbors, our surrounding communities, and what the federal government doing feels like it's pitting communities against each other. If they keep up with these cuts, a lot of what happens, it'll come down to it, is who can we turn away? Like Francesca mentioned earlier about what the tribe gives this program, it could get to that point where it's like, all right, we have to turn people away. We can only serve our own community, and that's not what we want to do.
Last time we talked for Purple Politics Nevada, it was actually about proposed Medicaid cuts earlier this spring and how they would impact the tribal clinic. You talked about, you know, kind of feeling that the federal government is not upholding promises to support the tribes. Do you feel the same way now when we're here at the food pantry?
Oh, even more. It's like every day because the moves that I feel that they're making in D.C. are taking the responsibility off of the federal government and moving it to the states. But you ask any tribal nation, you know, 574 in this country, the states don't have the obligation to these tribes. It is completely the federal government, and they are abandoning that. What is the federal government doing? They're not being accountable for this country. They're trying to move it to the states, in my opinion. Tribes have same as state status, and so you can't expect the state to uphold federal treaty and trust obligations.
How do you remain hopeful and how do you keep moving forward?
It really is the people, just the community here, because they are a resilient bunch. Always has been, always will be. I mean, we live in a desert. You don't come to the desert and live unless you are a resilient and tough people. And that's what we've always been around here. That's what we'll continue to be. We know how to survive here. And even with the changing times, we've had to adapt very quickly.
I think for me, it's just like what I said earlier, you never know what's going to happen. So that's what I'm hopeful for, is that something will come across my way that we can take advantage of to keep the pantry open. I love my job because I'm not working for a big major corporation or to put money in people's pockets. Everything that we do here impacts not only our community, but our surrounding communities. So to be able to have a job like this where I can come to work and what I do impacts people's lives, food is an immediate impact, something that you can see right away.
MIP expects the remaining federal funding to run out at the end of October. She says she'll try to stretch it as much as possible with the holidays right around the corner. Nevada lawmakers approved $800,000 for the Home Feeds Nevada program to try to replenish the hole left behind by the termination of the federal funding. While it will trickle down from food banks to tribes, the Food Distribution Center isn't set to get any of that money directly.
Since the inception of the program 3 years ago, the Nevada Department of Agriculture has received a total of about $6 million from the American Rescue Plan Act and the U.S. Department of Agriculture from the Local Food Purchase Assistance Grant. The department was told in March it wouldn't get any more federal assistance. The program doesn't have a recurring paycheck, so it'll have to make do until the next legislative session in 2027. I spoke with Democratic State Senator Fabian Dunyate to learn about the history of the program. Thank you so much for joining me today, Senator Dunyate.
Thank you so much for having me.
During the last legislative session, you co-sponsored a bill to fund the Home Feeds Nevada program, which is seen as a win-win for local farmers and food banks. Will you talk a little bit about this program?
The reason why we established this program was during the COVID-19 pandemic, we saw that our state was heavily dependent on other states to grow our foods. You know, if you remember the encounter of going to the grocery store and not having enough produce. And so in 2021, we created the Home Foods Nevada program, which essentially would purchase food directly from our farmers. And that food was going to be utilized so that the local food banks, whether it was Three Square or North Nevada Food Bank, they can recirculate it to people who are in highest of need. And so that's the program that has been created since 2021. And over the years, we've seen many local farmers have that level of sustainability. Now, what's been more challenging, right, is competing against the bigger farms. And if we look at the economy, supermarkets cater to customers. They want farms that can produce all year round, the avocado or the cucumber and so forth. Now, for the small farms, right, that's kind of hard because you don't have the diversity to be able to offer those same things. And so it does become a seasonal thing. The wide majority of the ones that we're talking about here in our state are the small farms. What I wanted was essentially to develop a system that really supported these farmers. When you go to these farms and you have an understanding of how much you're going to purchase from them, it allows the farms to actually plan for how much of their income they're going to be getting over the long term. And so rather than thinking from season to season, they're able to plan year to year. And overarchingly, right, that means that if they have a steady income base, they can look at other things that they can bring towards fulfilling their farm needs. Maybe they can look at agricultural tourism. And so the Home Feeds Nevada program really gave local farms, specifically in the rurals, a base income that they did not receive before. Now, earlier this year, the Trump administration cut that fund. And so because we originally funded it with ARPA dollars, which are the dollars that we received from the pandemic, mixed with the federal dollars, now we're in a position where there was no allocation. That's why I sponsored SB 233 to ensure that the farmers were able to receive that continued sustained support. We heard from the hearings that, you know, for many farmers, this was very emotional for them because, you know, some folks may characterize that this was a handout to farmers, but in reality, it was much more than that. It was a way for them to survive where their farms were probably not paid attention to. Not only are you helping small entrepreneurship in the parts of our state that are often left behind, you're also helping people who need food assistance.
Why is it important for the state to help provide financial assistance to local farmers? And can you talk about kind of the need? How widespread is food insecurity in Nevada?
You know, food insecurity is one of the more pervasive issues that I think many folks often do not realize that they're in. The state ranks as one of the highest when it comes to having a food desert. What that means is that you're located farther from a grocery store traditionally than other communities often are. It makes it more difficult that you have access to healthy foods. Folks often have the closest grocery store to them is not a grocery store, it's actually a gas station. Now, as far as this program, I think this is an opportunity for where we can invest back into the state. There are a lot of programs that we often deal with, right? And how do we ensure that the state dollars that we invest in remain in state? This is a prime example of one that does that.
The new state law appropriated $800,000. Is that enough to fill that gap? Is that going to stretch until 2027?
That's an interesting question. You know, when I first put the bill, my recommendation was to double the amount the legislature had allocated before. So we were talking about, you know, the legislature had given $400,000. Now we're talking $800,000. I thought that was an improvement, right? Because we're doubling down on our investment as a state. But we were put in a precarious situation under the Trump administration where all the federal funding got cut. And so the $800,000 is not nearly enough to where we have invested the program before. However, with that being said, it's still going to continue on for the next 2 years, at least as some level of continuation versus a complete eradication of the program. In the next 2 years, the bill also requires that there's a task force under the governor's office for food security. Their goal is to essentially develop the sustainable ways of how we can ensure that the fund is replenished without this legislature coming back in. There are other states that are looking at the same models. I use the analogy of you plant the seed now, the tree will grow, and the tree will feed more fruits.
I'll allow the farming puns this time.
Yeah.
You're listening to Democratic State Senator Fabian Dunyate talk about how the state legislature dug deep to help small local farmers plow. I'm Lucia Starbuck, and you're listening to Purple Politics Nevada. There's a lot of changes happening at the federal level. As ICE ramps up immigration enforcement, how do you think this could impact farm workers in Nevada and the food supply chain? And have you already seen any of those impacts?
As you may know, I have been trying my best to sound the alarm based on some of the efforts that we've seen here in our state. Just recently, we saw a video here in Las Vegas of essentially a family being pulled over by masked agents that were outside of Treasure Island or by the Las Vegas Strip. I think that is a call to question for all of us, because certainly it's alarming to see people apprehended without understanding your due process or who's apprehending you. This situation was recorded. There are plenty of those that are not. And so I'm very weary that situations like this might be occurring throughout the state and those stories are not being told. Listen, I think that folks can disagree and agree that immigration reform is needed, but our farm workers, many of them are immigrants, many of them are undocumented immigrants, and we need them. We need food on our tables. We need food to sustain our businesses. And if you don't have anyone growing or picking those food items, then our economy is going to face an economic emergency. My goal is to always protect and uphold the rights of every individual, regardless of their immigration status. I know President Trump has talked about protecting hospitality and farm workers, but that's not enough.
You come from a family of farm workers. How does that experience inform your perspective as a state lawmaker?
I have always had an interest in getting involved on farm issues just because my grandfather, he was part of the Bracero program. He was a farm worker that would come to the United States. He would work on the fields and then he would go back home to his family in Zacatecas. He traveled all throughout the country from California to Nevada to Texas. He would actually walk from state to state. And I remember those stories very vividly as a child. I think it has shown me the level of grit that my family has gone through. As the first in my family to graduate from college, I am very blessed with the opportunities that I had, but I never forget the hardships that my family went through, including my own father, right? Many of these individuals are immigrants. And I think as a lawmaker, it's important to not just advocate for these farm workers, but also to advocate for the immigrant story that many of them come from, right? These are jobs that are not easy and in very difficult conditions. And so it's my job to continue to advocate for them the same way that my family advocated for me. I'm very glad that I get to be one of the voices that represents them now in the state legislature.
Since 2022, Home Feeds Nevada purchased 3.6 million pounds of food. If you need a visual like me, that's 72 semi-trucks, says Patricia Hoppe, the Nevada Department of Agriculture's Division of Food and Nutrition Administrator.
It has had a significant impact because we have made a point on focusing on only local producers within our state. And we've also focused on smaller producers, and it has actually helped them grow their business. We've had some farmers that have shared that had it not been for Home Feeds Nevada, especially during the pandemic, they would have lost their business. They would have lost their farm, which provides for their family. And in some cases, because of Home Feeds Nevada, they have been able to expand their business as well and actually hire staff that's within their local communities. This is good government.
In December, the department was notified that an additional nearly $4 million would be made available. But in March, leadership at USDA said the funding was terminated and did not provide an explanation, Hoppe says. She is excited to be part of the Council on Food Security, which is required to study how to make the program sustainable under Dunyate's legislation. She is currently working with 19 active producers and expects the $800,000 appropriation to be spent by the end of 2025.
Programs such as this that don't have a steady funding source, we have to be very adaptable to finding new things. So in our first meeting, we talked about some of the challenges that we have, such as infrastructure, where some of our producers that are in very rural areas of our state, including tribal community areas, have difficulty getting food to food banks that are regionally designated. So we're hoping that will be a part of long-term financial stability as well as sustainability of the Home Feeds program.
The federal funding officially dried up at the end of June. Even though state law with the new funding went into effect in July, it hasn't sprouted yet because of administrative red tape, and that's created a big problem. The legislative fiscal calendar doesn't align with the seasonal farming one.
We have learned from some of our producers, unfortunately, that they do have crops that are going to waste in the field as they're having difficulty selling those products.
That's the case for the Alanis family farm in Fallon. I met with three generations of family members who walked with me along neat green rows of cantaloupe, but something wasn't right. Instead of getting shipped off to the food bank, the melons were rotting in the dirt.
All rotten. See that? Just out of this little spot.
How can you tell they're rotten?
So when they're rotten, the texture. So go ahead and press it.
Oh, that's really soft.
Yeah, so it's no good. And we just leave them here because there's, you can see.
That was Kuko Alanis. He works alongside his father, aunts, sister, and son. There are no machines, so the workers pick by hand. It's extremely labor intensive. There are 8 acres of cantaloupe ready to be picked, and Alanis shows me more than 800 melons sitting in a refrigerated trailer with nowhere to go. They purchased seeds back in December under the assumption that more funding would be coming in.
What was your reaction when you saw that the funding for the Home Feeds Nevada was getting cut by the federal government?
A shock, because what happens is we had everything lined out. We got news from Patricia saying there's no funding. You already have your plants growing. Any investment, it feels bad. It feels like someone just pokes you right in the gut. You know what I mean? Like, what am I going to do? Devastating.
Things really started to get tough last year when the Nevada Department of Agriculture put a cap on the amount of food that could be purchased per month before learning if it would receive more federal support.
Are you guys like in the red? Are you making a profit?
Last year we didn't make profit at all. My dad had to pay out of pocket to pay his workers, and like all these boxes here, you know what I mean, they cost money. They're about $1.75 a piece. You know, we make a little bit, but not the amount, you know what I mean, $17,000 worth of seed. You know, it's kind of hard to get that money back. They only get so much out of a produce stand or farmer's markets. You know, we got organic fertilizers, you know, we got hoop houses to fix, you know, we had to repair laborers. At the end, you look at the numbers, what you sold here, he's digging in his pocket, and it's sad. You know, things need to get a little better. Like I said, we love doing this. We talked about quitting it, but it seems like it's, if we do that for our community, this is a big thing out here. That's one of the things that actually stopped us, because the Heart to Go cantaloupe, it's a Fallon thing. It's a local thing, you know what I mean? It's known for its cantaloupe. And just to drop it like that, I think the community would take a hit.
They are looking forward to the Fallon Cantaloupe Festival later this month, but Alanis says farming is already a gamble.
It is. It's farming is a big risk. It's, you won't sell it, you know what I mean, or you won't have enough water, or a crop will die, or it's a big risk. It's like poker, you know what I mean?
Over at Blue Lizard Farm in Caliente, about 2.5 hours outside of Las Vegas, owner and operator Rodney Maring grows leafy greens like spinach and lettuce, root vegetables, and he planted tomatoes for Home Feeds Nevada.
We're planning 6 months in advance. Normally I do 5 greenhouses in tomatoes, which is about 800 plants. This year I decided I would only plant 3 of our greenhouses out in tomatoes. One, I knew I could sell those either locally or at farmers markets, or Home Feed Nevada would get funded in time that I could sell the tomatoes. The current administration is really making things hard, harder than it should be.
During the COVID-19 pandemic, farmers markets took a big hit, and they're still finding their way back. But for Maring, it's expensive to participate.
We really struggled through COVID and then struggled through our loss of our markets. But that was about the time that Home Feed Nevada kicked in. And so that was a big lifesaver for me and my farm. We didn't understand this concept when we started farming. It's really difficult for a small farm to send enough produce to a market that's 2.5 hours away and make it profitable. It easily costs about, realistically, $500 to make the trip to Vegas and back. If you think about it, I have a cooling trailer, a pickup truck, 8 tires on the road, a generator to run the cooler. Only time you're away from the farm, things happen. Stuff doesn't get watered, doesn't get cared for. The farmer gets exhausted, you know, might have to take a day off. That delays weeding, and it just creates more problems. So with Home Feed Nevada, I had to switch to more of a wholesale pricing, but yet I could spend more time in the farm growing larger quantities of food and have the trip paid for to Las Vegas. Even though it didn't cover 100% of my costs, it covered a substantial amount. It was still a net plus because it was a consistent customer and reliable.
Mehring also traveled to Carson City in March to advocate for the state funding. It was his first experience at the Nevada legislature. He says Home Feeds Nevada kept his farm and home afloat.
So we started our farm basically out of necessity. We were trying to find a way to make a living on our 10 acres. It's a very small community. The whole of Lincoln County is under 5,000 people. So there wasn't a lot of work. And so we were probably on the verge of closing the doors after COVID. And then this program kicked in. It made the difference.
Is that why you kind of turned to the state legislature?
Basically for my survival, right? For the survival of my farm, for the survival of my home, because it's attached to my farm.
In June, Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro sued USDA to restore his state's local food purchase assistance agreement program. That lawsuit is pending. Mehring says it's not just about survival.
I got so much feedback from the drivers. I was also on occasion running into the churches that were getting our produce. We got high praise. Number one, they didn't normally get this fresh produce and people were really just loving it. And I would spend the rest of my life growing for food banks. If I could find a way to at least break even, I would really do that, is spend the rest of my life growing the very best food that I possibly could for the people that can least afford it.
That was farmer Rodney Mehring, Kuko Alanis, Democratic State Senator Fabian Dinyate, Pyramid Lake Paiute Tribe Chairman Stephen Wadsworth, and Food Distribution Director Francesca Maipi. I'm Lucia Starbuck, and you've been listening to Purple Politics Nevada.